You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, I mentioned Britney Spears is going to be with us later. That's totally false. But there is a huge celebrity in the studio, right now. Just a moment. We're going to introduce him. I want to begin by just saying, you know, we're talking a little bit later in the show about post-apocalyptic children's literature. We wonder, in terms of you getting in touch with the conversation here at 877-8-MY-TAKE, how do you approach the subject with your kids? That's also a good story. We want to talk about favorite, you know, books that star kids where the adults are all gone. You know, you can begin with The Wizard of Oz if you like. It's a great theme, an interesting theme, particularly now. And if you saw the movie WALL-E, post-apocalypse is what that movie is all about. But we come back to the city of New York, and we want to set you right in the center of the action. And how does this feel?
New York is the cultural and financial capital of the world. A city of skyscrapers so dense, you can strain your neck marveling at their magnificence.
Tell me more, Tony.
An enormous bazaar of ideas and the best of everything that money can buy.
Everything?
A city of sprawling parks. A port city where the smell of the sea comes at you when you least expect it.
The smell, the feeling of New York, and much of the New York skyline erupted at the beginning of the 20th century. You can have that similar experience with probably a worse smell if you go to Beijing today and look at the air in that city, which is erupting in the beginning of the 21st century. Cranes everywhere, architectural monuments on every street corner. Kurt Anderson has just returned from Beijing and has a piece in this month's Vanity Fair all about the architectural monuments that are sprouting in Beijing here in the advance of the Olympics. Of course, Kurt Anderson, huge public radio celebrity, host and writer of PRI's Studio 360. Kurt, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
So you walk the streets of Beijing, and the monuments architecturally there, and I wanted you to talk specifically about the ones that really impressed you, and we have a slideshow on our website if you want to see them, reminded you of the architectural monuments in New York of the 20th century.
Well, I took my notes and I realized that it reminded me of that more than anything else. There's also just the sheer size. I mean, the old historic core of Beijing, it's about the same size as Manhattan. The fully urbanized part is about the same size of all New York City. So I was looking at that, and then I suddenly thought, wait, where have we seen this before? This movie has run before. I've always been amazed that in such a brief period of time between 1900 and 1930, all of the icons of Manhattan, of New York City, essentially got built, from the New York Public Library to the Empire State Building. Rockefeller Center got started. Then, as a sort of exclamation point to all that, the 1939 New York World's Fair. And that was at a time that America itself was just sort of emerging as a serious world power. The American century was starting, and I thought that's exactly what's happening here. And the buildings in Beijing are not just big and flashy and done by famous architects. Several of them are really great.
Well, you've got the Television Center, which is a Rem Koolhaas square Mobius strip in the middle of Beijing, an enormous office building.
Mobius? What does that mean?
It's kind of like a loop that is infinite. It's sort of a single-sided loop. If you can go to our website and see exactly what we mean. But it's a strange model for an architectural shape.
It's really unprecedented and looks different as you get closer from different angles in the city. I mean, most, you know, new buildings, even often, you know, iconic, great new buildings, you see them, you get them, okay, next. Whereas this is so interesting because you first see it on the Beijing skyline, and it's weird, and then you travel toward it and to
looks
different
like an
angles.
Arch. Looks like an arch, but
it looks
it's
like
not
an arch, and then you see it's not an arch, and then it looks because it operates in so many weird angles that's frankly very hard to describe. Better you should look at it in the pictures on the site. But it changes shape as you approach it in an extraordinary way. And then it is this loop. I mean, it's this 50-story, 49-story tall loop With a top and a bottom and a top that sort of cantilevers out right. into space. And
it's an engineering marvel. I mean, when they connected the two sides, there was like a giant audience to watch it. They didn't think they would necessarily connect, but they did.
It was the day after Christmas last year, actually, right. Boxing Day, and of course they built it so that it didn't touch until you know, they would lean just enough toward each other in the building and then barely touch. It was like a NASA, you know, space docking maneuver.
Let's move on to a different building. Bird nests are not simply on the menu in Chinese restaurants anymore. They're a part of the skyline there in Beijing.
Yeah, and that's going to become, it is already becoming the icon of the Olympics, the Bird's Nest National Stadium, where the opening ceremonies are going to take place next Friday, the closing ceremonies 2 weeks later, and, you know, the big finals and the track events and stuff.
And the steel, the woven steel around that is really a monument not only to China and to the Olympics, but also to the high technology that allows you to even construct something like this today.
Well, exactly. And because, you know, it is amazing looking. It looks like something a very talented child would make. You know, not perfect, but and kind of irrational, but beautiful in its basket weaving sense. But it is, as you say, it's these, you know, 1 meter thick steel ribbons sort of wrapped up as if by a giant or God.
Can I ask you a little bit about your premise? I mean, the Gilded Age of New York was really a series of private sector icons who produced architectural monuments to themselves on the New York skyline. It seems to me that in some sense what's going on in Beijing is monuments to Chinese authority, and that there's not a kind of wildcat capitalist architectural building going on in Beijing, but much more of an institutional government, more like the Pentagon than Grand Central Terminal.
I would disagree. I think it's pretty wildcat-ish. You know, the CCTV building, and it's... Yes, it's the government television, state-run television, but once you start talking to people there, you realize it's not that simple. It's not like it's the government here, private sector here, and it's entirely distinct and binary. Everything is sort of, you know, or all these buildings anyway, is a little bit of both. So, and then this building, this complex by the American architect Steve Hall, is entirely private. It's these 12 buildings of movie theaters and hotels and apartments and gyms and a swimming pool 300 feet off the ground. Now, that's entirely private, but that developer is deeply, you know, connected to the regime. So I don't think you can draw those distinctions absolutely. And certainly in the case of New York, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge, the first great architectural icon, arguably, built in the 1880s, was a public infrastructure project.
Right. Well, walking the streets of Beijing, certainly very, very exciting. We're going to get to headlines in a moment, but I wanted to ask you just before we move to the next segment. You got a post-apocalyptic story that you loved as a child? Quickly?
If you're going to define The Wizard of Oz as post-apocalyptic, I don't remember post-apocalyptic stories other than that. Although
he was asleep. He was a child of the 60s. He was asleep during
Matilda,
the post-apocalypse.
Matilda.
Kurt Anderson, stay with us. We'll be right back.